Hey, this is Josh Kimball from St. Didacus and Dogwood, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. This week, we welcome Dogwood and St. Didacus frontman Josh Kimball to the podcast. Josh talks about Dogwood's history, including their time with Rescue Records, and how the music scene changed over the course of their time on Tooth & Nail Records. We also talk about how the band's 2017 reunion show led to Josh's new project, St. Didacus. It was great getting to chat with Josh and revisit Dogwood's discography, and I hope you guys enjoyed this week's conversation. How you doing?
Okay, I'm doing pretty good. Just hanging out today. Just picking up on some music projects and construction projects and all the other stuff that needs to happen on a Monday.
That's cool. How is COVID treating you?
Oh, I mean, I don't have it, and
well, that's good.
my family's healthy, so I mean, that's what I can ask for.
No complaints. Yeah.
I could complain about some of the stuff, but like really what it boils down to is as long as we're staying healthy and, you know, not driving everyone too crazy in the house,
yeah.
Staying shut in. It was a shut in school year, but
yeah,
it's good. Yeah. We're okay.
Cool. 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 So are you Southern California born and raised?
Actually, I was not born here.
Okay.
I was born in an army hospital in Missouri. And then we moved here we moved once, and then we moved out to Southern California when I was really little. So I don't really remember anything else besides Southern California. Yeah. But I technically was not born here.
Gotcha. Was your dad in the army?
Yeah, he was army. So we were, you know, in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Gotcha. Did he get out shortly after you were born, where you could kind of stay in one place, or?
No, we moved to Florida shortly thereafter.
Okay.
And then when he left the family, my mom moved out back out here to her family in Southern California.
Gotcha.
So I don't really remember much of army life or baby life. So I only know Southern California.
That's right. Yeah. I should have remembered that. There's preschool days is all about that. oh man.
actually Russell, the drummer, wrote that song about his family. So,
oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, too many families can relate to those lyrics, but
yeah.
It was actually written by someone else, but it was just a similar circumstance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So,
what was growing up like for you?
Growing up was, I thought it was, I had a pretty fun childhood experience, you know, until I started, you know, having my eyes open to an abusive, you know, stepfather relationship with my mom and the family. And I was like, what's happening here, you know? And, I had a brother and sister, and so I kind of grew up in the household with the nuclear family dynamic, but it was very tumultuous with the way they were fighting, but all at the same time, still trying to make it happen at church and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, this it's crazy because we're trying to be a good family, but it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem good at home. You know? It's like it's a weird experience as a kid to see that, to see things happening that, that you shouldn't see happening, I guess, you know, but, you know, I had a good friends and played sports and had a, all the good aspects of childhood were there aside from the very bad ones, you know?
Yeah.
So can't complain cause you know, I was overall healthy. I didn't break too many bones, But that's just saying things really positively, you know, like, cause there was a lot of bad stuff, but there's also a lot of good stuff that came out of it.
Yeah.
You know, lifelong friendships and stuff too.
Yeah. What got you into music?
Probably my mom and her side of the family. They were all record collectors and concert goers and partiers, you know, rock and rollers, backstage people and big raging parties at the house and stuff like that. But so, you know, my mom was into like, say the classic rock stuff, like Santana and Doobie Brothers. And then my uncle, aunt and uncle were very R&B and, the lowrider culture, the Mexican Riverside, Los Angeles County, lowrider culture was oldies and R&B and, you know, break dancing music. So I got a good mix of everything in there. And then I would go to concerts and house parties with them because, for a while I was the only kid in the family. There was no other cousins or brothers and sisters yet, so I got to experience all the music culture that they experienced all the way up in my early years. And then started enjoying it for myself a little bit later on when I started buying records in like late junior high, high school, you know, buying some punk rock stuff and rap records for myself, experiencing what I wanted to listen to. So kind of early on, and then I started going to concerts on my own, you know, after high school, in high school and after.
That's cool. Did you ever pick up an instrument and try to play, or were you always interested in being a vocalist, singer?
I don't know. I mean, I probably did try to pick up stuff and play, but never really stuck to it or got really good. I wasn't totally interested in it, but I think that actually in sixth grade, I sang at an open house, and I sang a theme song from An American Tale in front of the whole school and all their parents, and I was pretty embarrassed, but that was my debut public singing career.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, but other than that, I didn't really do anything musical through high school, or I didn't do theater, I didn't do any music groups until after, you know, after a while when I was probably senior and other musicians were asking me to do stuff with them, or mainly singing because I was wild and crazy and writing poetry and stuff like that. So I know you had Josh Hadquist on a show a couple shows ago, or recently, and he actually started with Dogwood for all intents and purposes and then asked me to join, you know, straight out of high school.
That's awesome. And it was poetry and just being crazy that led you to being a front man.
I guess. I mean, and maybe one of the only other few people in our school that was into the same music as Josh and a couple other friends, you know, punk rock and some of the post-hardcore stuff and early San Diego music scene stuff. And then knowing that we all had similar interests and similar faith backgrounds, and they're like, "Hey, you want to do this?" And I said, "Sure, why not?"
And that's awesome.
I wasn't good. My voice really sounded like a 17-year-old, you know, singing. So I sounded like a 17-year-old with no experience singing, and it didn't get much better for a while until I figured things, how I sang and how I wanted to sound, and, you know, let myself be produced a little bit, you know, like that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I was a natural, but I really wasn't that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll admit it.
Yeah. Did you take lessons at any point?
No.
No.
Just hearing from other singers and stuff like that, just hearing kind of their techniques and what they do just to warm up or anything like that. I never really did that. So I just kind of went into it kind of singing how I thought I should sound, I guess. But yeah, nothing formal. No.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So Josh started Dogwood. Essentially, he asked you to join, and that was your first band right out the gate.
Right out, yeah. Right, just taking slamming whatever poetry I had into the music that they had, and trying to make songs fit. And yeah, I had no real like example of how to write songs or anything like that. I was just trying to, you know, I had an idea of what bands I liked and who we wanted to play with or whatever, but just trying to, I guess, be on stage and, you know, have fun with it, you know.
That's cool. Did you have any involvement in the name in choosing Dogwood?
Only like with a yes vote.
Okay.
Because we had to change our name. There was some other hardcore band on the East Coast that had the same name. We were Half Off. And we found out through a zine, a paper, you know, little independent zine, that there was another band. So the guitar player's mom, he was Jace, and his mom said, "Hey, check this out. It's like, you know, the Legend of the Dogwood." And I thought it would be cool to be called Legend of the Dogwood. But then we're like, "Yeah, it's maybe too long. How about just Dogwood?" You know. And then later found out that it was actually a real flower and it's a real tree, blah, blah. But, you know, like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're just named after a flower now, but with some significant mythological and historical meanings, you know? So that was kind of the origin of it. She's like, "How about this?" And we're like, "Yes."
Sailing these seas alone, I realize I could never make it on my own. Losing from experience, the spark of mine has run a leak. I think I feel my body weak. I need your help to make me right."
What led you guys to Rescue Records in those early days?
Probably being around, like I said, we all have a similar faith backgrounds, and the church that we went to had some of the members of No Innocent Victim and POD who were on Rescue Records already. I think by the time we started as a band, they were already putting out records with them. And then, you know, just playing with them so many times in San Diego County and beyond, finally just like, "Hey, get on this label, you know, it'll be good for all of us." And it just worked out because they were a San Diego label and they were looking for a punk band. And there was, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there wasn't a ton of like Christian punk bands starting, you know, at that time, and we were just starting, at least not in Southern California, at least not that I had heard. They were looking for a punk band, and we said, "Hey, we could do this. Check this out." And it just worked out. And we had a good relationship with them because, you know, I'm still friends with all those guys today, you know?
Yeah.
And, from there, I mean, it was only two records, really, plus a couple comps and EPs, but like,
yeah.
it was definitely a good starting point for a kid out of high school, you know, for me. I mean, I know that they went on to bigger and better things and everything, POD and everybody, but I think it was a good starting point for a band like us.
Yeah. Was that pretty early on in the Dogwood days that you guys ended up with Rescue?
Yeah, that was our first like real label. We had done like recordings and comps and demos with, you know, some other friends and stuff, but nobody really had like money or distribution or you know, wanted to put a CD out, because at the time it was like, whoa, a CD, like, wow, we get there someday, you know. We couldn't figure out how to do it ourselves at the time. By the time we started figuring it out is when we started getting interest from, you know, Rescue Records. And and even at that point, when I heard of Rescue Records, I had not even heard of other record labels really that would be interested in us. You know, I had listened to Epitaph Records and Fat Records and, of course, major label stuff, but I didn't know much about, you know, any other independent labels.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like that label had a leg up, maybe because of the talent on the label with POD and NIV and Point of Recognition. But it seemed like they had some money where they could make videos and promote bands a little better than maybe some of the independent Christian labels or around at that time.
Oh yeah, I mean, for the time, and because they had, I know that Noah Senior, the owner, he definitely had wanted to make it big, and you know, once you know, NIV went to Victory and POD, they're of course getting bigger and bigger. That there was enough like name behind the bands on the label that the label itself could kind of, he didn't really have to do much more and he didn't really have to do anything less or more. You know, it was kind of like just that it was just doing good. And then, you know, once POD got off the label, and then NIV got off the label, and then where does that leave all other bands on the label? Like, how it's kind of like a rescue part two or three, you know, like without the big dogs, I guess, like without POD and NIV, and you know, not that we were big or anything, but like, you know, we moved on, and then, yeah, like you said, Point of Recognition, and there was definitely some other good bands on there too that that went on to join other bands too, you know. I know that Steven from Anne Berlin, his first band was on Rescue Records also, and then they put out some other local bands like Scratchline and stuff like that that were really good records, but then Rescue kind of, you know, slowly petered out after a few years.
Yeah.
So I definitely don't regret being on Rescue at all. It was good for us at the time for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing that video for Preschool Days when you guys were on G-Rock, and that was my introduction to the band, and I was familiar with Rescue Records from POD and NIV already, and it was, they seem to have something different from some of the other labels that were not Tooth and Nail at the time.
Yeah, they definitely, they were a label that was showing interest in us, and we didn't have other labels doing that, so it was like, it seemed like a perfect time and fit, and we were already friends, like I said, with everybody who was on the label at the time, so it was just good. It was small, definitely mom and pop style, you know, label to be on. We used to just drive down to the office and book our shows from their phone lines, and you know, borrow some money to buy some merch and stuff like that. It was very very DIY, very independent as far as independent goes.
How'd you guys end up with Tooth and Nail?
Well, I think through Rescue and just playing, you know, Rescue would put us out on tour and, you know, across the country and Cornerstone and such. And then we kind of caught the eye and ear of Tooth and Nail through some of the Tooth and Nail bands. Cause anytime they would come through Southern California, especially San Diego, we would play with them, or we'd catch them on the road and play with them. But then they'd be like, hey, you got to sign Dogwood, you know? They're a punk band that's not on Tooth and Nail. And if Tooth and Nail wants to have, like, the best punk bands, then Dogwood probably should be on that list. And then, you know, we were already on Rescue. I think by the time our second record on Rescue had come out, Tooth and Nail was, you know, more interested. And because we were playing more shows and getting better shows with, you know, bands to, you know, bigger bands that weren't on Tooth and Nail, I don't know, just getting more popular at the time. The sound that we had at the time was good for like the surf and skate scene that we were a part of down in San Diego and Southern California. And just we would be at all the festivals and shows that where there were skate demos and other bands playing. And finally, Brandon's like, "Yeah, man, when you guys get off Rescue, we should talk and stuff like that." And then we kind of always try to play it cool, you know. I mean, even maybe to a fault the whole time through our whole band. We tried to play it cool, like it wasn't really phasing us, but like it would be good to, you know, move to Tooth and Nail, because, you know, but we didn't want to do it too fast because we were hoping, you know, that we could get on an Epitaph or a Fat Records or, you know, something other, you know, maybe not just do it like every other church band did it, you know. We were seeing if we could, because the reason I got into the punk music was because I was watching all the skate and snowboarding videos, and all the soundtracks were, of course, that music, and I was like, man, I would love to do that. I would love to be on these videos. I would love to make a record and have somebody, like, you know, snowboarding to my music, stuff like that. So, you know, eventually we got there into achieving that goal, for me at least. And then, we never got onto Epitaph, but Tooth and Nail is definitely a good thing for us. you know, they were always good to us.
Yeah.
You know, it was a good thing.
Yeah, it seemed like you were early in when Tooth and Nail started signing a bunch of punk rock bands and kind of survived the boom. There were a lot of bands that were signed and dropped during your tenure at Tooth and Nail in that genre.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you would hear stories about, oh, we didn't get a good contract, or, oh, you know, we're just lost in the shuffle because there's so many bands on the label. But, you know, I mean, we were in the same shuffle. We had made, I don't know about contracts, but like they were fine. They were okay to us. Maybe we didn't know any better. We're like, hey, they want to put out a record and pay for the studio time. Let's do it. You know, we weren't like totally looking at all the details of everything. We just wanted to do the band and have fun doing it. And, for that purpose alone, they were really good to us in that sense, put out advertisements and distribution and, you know, pay for some videos and stuff. There's probably more that they could have done, and there's probably more that we could have done too. You know?
Yeah.
As a band. So, but as far as like, you know, leaving the label or anything like that, I was always like, dude, we signed a contract. I want to be a man of my word. And we want to do all this stuff to at least finish that stuff. And, you know, they kept backing the albums and the production. So let's keep making records, you know?
Hatred, invisible disease. You're wasting skin, hide your beard. What a sorry excuse of the man. Racist, you personify these words. Pitiful, shallow, and low. Ignorance breaks your soul. We are so thinking of freedom and thinking of harness.
In 2001, I think it was, you guys, Face Down re-released your self-titled record. This is not a new album. Was there any issues with Tooth and Nail with Face Down releasing older material?
We didn't want there to be, because I'm good friends with Jason Dunn. We went to the same church growing up, and we were always just talking about like Dogwood being on there, but we weren't like, you know, we weren't hardcore. So, but we were hardcore enough, like we were like a harder punk band. So it was, cause we could play with all those bands, like shows, like, you know, Face Down Fest and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, cause we had done an independent record. The reason we did that was cause it was kind of like, we're going to put this out ourselves to try and maybe get on a major label. We made some of the songs longer to be on the radio, stuff like that. Cause that was right after Rescue Records, cause we had a 2-record deal with Rescue. Then we wanted to do the independent to see what would happen. Brandon didn't even want he didn't say anything about the independent record that we did, which was the self-titled. But Jason's like, hey, dude, I could put that out. You know, it's hardcore enough in that sense. But since we had already recorded with Tooth and Nail a record, so he's like, well, I'll just take off those songs so there is no issue. You know, because they're there are different recordings, obviously, and that was with Joe, a different drummer than Russ. So there might not have been issues. I don't know, because it would technically be like a cover, or, you know, the technicalities of the verbiage of the contract and stuff. Yeah. But Jason and I were like, let's take those songs off, and you know, you can still find them on the, if you have the actual independent, but if the Face Down one has a different version of. Or it doesn't have that different version of Suffer and Never Die.
That's cool.
Yeah. So no issues.
That's cool. Yeah. It's curious because it's not something you see a whole lot with Tooth and Nail. I know people have talked about issues with that because of contract stuff.
Oh, I mean, we didn't even like really, we didn't really look at the contract as far as those.
You just
because I was
it.
Like, no, because no, well, because I didn't want any, I didn't want anything to happen to Jason.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to keep things amicable, you know, between everybody and stuff like that. Being the inherent peacemaker that I try to be, you know, but I just thought it'd be better just not even deal with it, just take those songs off and then put it out. And then it was never a big deal. The only issue that Brandon ever had with us putting out independent was between
More Than Conquerors and Building a Better Me, we had put out a live record that was self-produced, self-financed and produced. And he didn't like that because we released it at Cornerstone on Tooth and Nail Day. And that was one thing he took issue with, because it did have Tooth and Nail songs on it, but it was a live recording and it didn't have new material on it. So I was like, well, we did it. There's only 1,000 copies. It's going to go away soon, you know? And so he kind of lost interest in it. So, but it was just something that we did. And there was no real consequence for it, aside from the fact that he was a little bit irritated, but I think he got over it.
Superficial nature wearing thin, I can't seem to begin. What really do I see when I step back at me?
Was it difficult to keep the band going through member changes throughout the career?
Yeah, I think there's always that speed bump of, because the first drummer left and then we got Russ, right? For the Rescue Records. Russell drummed on both Rescue Records, and then he left because he was drumming with some other bands at the time, and you know, he went on tour with POD, the drum tech for WOV. And then so during that time was when we did the independent record, and he was not on that record, and it was Joe. And then Joe left the band and Russ came back. So Russ drummed on all the Tooth and Nail stuff. And then so we had the same core for a good while, and then Sean recorded Matt Aragon record, and then he left, and then that's when Danny joined. And we did our last Tooth and Nail record, and then a couple more songs. So yeah, there was some speed bumps and hurdles. We tried to keep it as cohesive as possible. And then after that record had come out, that's when we had a touring band basically after that. So Danny and I and a couple other dudes comprised Dogwood on the road, you know, as everyone had gone their separate ways. But there's always that speed bump because you have that chemistry, and then you lose a little bit of the chemistry when someone leaves, and then you rebuild the chemistry, and then somebody else leaves. And then what's really cool, I guess, about the new chemistry is that you get the new energy. And then, but then when you get the new energy, then something else changes. Like, well, the contract is up now. So now what are we going to do for records? You know, but now we take that chemistry and put it into a live show or on the road only, or put out singles or best of with Tooth and Nail. So never really got to record a full length with our tour, with the guys who were in the last iteration of Dogwood, you know? But it was cool. I was glad that for the majority of the time it was, you know, the same core lineup on Tooth and Nail.
Was Danny really the reason why Seismic had a shift in sound?
I think it was one reason, yeah, for sure. Because Sean is very theatrical and very, you know, he's a dyed-in-the-wool music guy. He's like, you know, what's funny is actually he's a bass player, like scholarship level, music college level bass player, but he played guitar in Dogwood, right? And then Jason, the bass player, is actually a ripping guitar player, like glam rock, heavy metal, when you name it, like lead guitarist who played bass in Dogwood. So I was super like blessed and lucky and stoked to have all these musicians in the band. Russ is our drummer, but he can play piano and write song lyrics and guitar for the band. I'm like, what? You guys, I don't even belong. I'm still back in my high school days, like trying to slam poetry onto your music, you know? I was always fortunate to be with all these crazy musicians. So Sean is this theater, you know, perfect, like, you know, music theory nerd songwriter. and who has, you know, if you listen to something like Matt Aragon record, for example, it's almost like an opus, like an operatic, like story from start to finish. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, we all contributed to writing, it's mostly like Sean's kind of final goodbye with us. Right. And yeah. Then he actually got to produce Seismic with Danny playing. So then Danny is like very, he has very like dark chords and like, you know, his strong, very metal. He plays very metal structure, like solid solo. He can play solos and like very chugga chugga chugga, you know. But and his songs are, he writes in like in my range, like where I can hit my metal high notes and my regular middle notes, I guess. I don't know the correct term still. I'm not as music nerdy as some, you know, I should be at this point. But he, you know, there is a subtle, not even a subtle difference. You can totally hear the difference between Sean plays and then Danny plays. So it was kind of cool in that sense to have Sean producing when Danny was playing, because Danny, like I said, brings that kind of like different, even like song structure. And then you can hear kind of some of Sean's influence on the way I was singing over it, or any harmonies on that and stuff like that too, because it adds to how the, I feel like the, my voice and the guitar were always kind of trying to be in harmony with each other. And so Sean still brought that on the last record with some darker chord structures, and Jason wrote some of those songs too, but like darker chord structures, and then still trying to have the Dogwood vocal sound over it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What led to the band, I guess, just petering out, didn't, no real breakup or calling it quits, just kind of stopped, right?
Yeah, there's not a total farewell or anything like that. But I think just, yeah, like the, some of the, maybe some of the thing had to do with the member change stuff, but also going on tours. The shows were becoming a little bit different for us. We weren't getting on some good tours. We were headlining the shows, but we would take out like a new Tooth & Nail band with us, or a band from another label for a couple of weeks. And it just wasn't, we weren't getting as good of shows as we could have got, or the fans weren't following along with our changes, you know, that we were doing. It's not the old sound, you know, as we were kind of maturing or in a sound, the fans didn't come along with us, I guess. And to some degree, and then as the scene changed and there was more, I guess, screamo coming up, we never changed to that, you know, we didn't adapt to that sound at all. I didn't want to. We stuck to it, and it just kind of, I guess, people lost interest, you know, and we're like, okay, people lost interest, so we'll just kind of wipe our hands of it, you know?
Did you do anything musically between it petering out and the reunion show you played in 2017?
Not too much. Between Danny and I, we would like, there's always songs that are unfinished or in demo version. So Danny and I would like put out some comp stuff for Indie Vision Music, or you know, if other people wanted to do a comp record for fundraising stuff, we did something for One Truth, and then, just some other, just compilation stuff, because somebody could pay for the studio time or anything like that. We're like, yeah, we got a song or two, finish up or something, you know. So, but nothing really, like, we never sat down together and wrote an album or any other things, you know, had plans to reunionize, you know.
Yeah.
And then we did the reunion in 2017 because the timing had just worked out with everybody being in town around Christmas and New Year's. And Mike called me and said, hey, man, you wanna play a show? And I called everyone up, and it just worked out. You know, it was perfect.
Stop feeding fear and anger every day. Stop making people feel so fearful. Give them hope.
We're alive. What led to this new project, Saint Didicus?
Oh, I think that was just, that's me after a while. Like after the reunion show, I had a lot of fun, of course, and just, but we were playing all, we were playing all of our old stuff because we haven't put out a record in so long. So I was like, I really want to write some new songs, you know, maybe even cover some lesser known Dogwood songs that didn't get attention. But I would just want to, continue doing my craft and, you know, honing my craft, doing my talent, whether that's with, you know, the same musicians or new musicians. I have so many songs now that I've written over the years that haven't ever been out. So I tell other friends that are doing stuff, hey, if you have any songs that need to be finished writing or whatever, if you need a vocalist, I'll do it. Let me know, send me stuff, you know, because nowadays it's easier to send stuff back and forth, even if it's across country. So I just wanted to put songs out. And now, you know, with everything that's happening in our country and world right now, I thought I have some good topics to sing about and kind of get my voice out there to people who might not just, you know, I don't have every single person I know is, you know, every fan that whoever like Dogwood or whatever, like they don't have my phone number and I don't have theirs. So like, here's a way to, we can still kind of connect through some song. And, I just feel like it's also, I can maybe give a voice to some things that might not be as heard in the, you know, whether it's in the Christian industry or the non-Christian or anything like that, but just a way for me to continue making music. And I thought Saint Didicus was a good, fitting name because it's the patron saint of San Diego and, you know, SD, and it's just a fun way for me to continue with the saga of my musical career.
That's cool. You just put out this new single, The God Limits. What's that about?
So that was about one of those topics I was talking about, like how do we ask questions right now with, you know, how, without causing a fight. And mm-hmm. that one in particular is about some of the protests, peaceful protests that were happening that turned into riots, and about maybe about 2-3 weeks ago, and some of them were really close to my house here in San Diego. And how do you, as a Christian or someone of faith, ask a question like, where are you, God, in this, and why is this happening, for one thing, but also how can we get past this and move beyond this as a nation? Because I know this has been happening for a long time, kind of since before I was here, and seems like it's still happening. So what's going on? And I know plenty of people who are not Christians that still are asking those same questions, like, what does God think about all this? And Christians are sometimes afraid to even ask those questions, you know? I think that through this song, it's kind of asking that question that we've all been asking our whole lives, you know, God, are you out there, kind of thing, but also, what is God, what is going on, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the lyric video is about, and the song itself is just like, hey, what's happening, and how can we get past this?
That's cool. Is the plan to just keep releasing singles, or are you going to release an album?
Right now, I mean, Danny and I have recorded a couple songs. Danny, and Andrew drummed on. Danny played bass and guitar on that song, and Andrew drummed. So we did a couple of songs, a handful. So we're not a full band by any means. I wanted to write some songs. Danny said he had some songs, and so that worked out for a good handful. So, you know, if we do a couple more, that could be an EP at least.
Yeah.
But there's no, like, again, we're not really pushing it. It's not my full-time job at this point. And there's no like label interest, you know, just from the single so far, but it's been doing pretty good and people are hearing it and sharing it and stuff. So, it's fun to kind of create and get your medium out there. Not just for the sake of hearing your own voice, but for like asking and answering those questions, for one thing, because when I write the lyrics down, it's cool. I mean, when I write it in my book or whatever, it's fine. But then when I record it, it's another thing. And then when I hear the finished product, I'm like, okay, now I can kind of see what I was even trying to say myself, you know? So I do want to finish at least five more songs. I want to finish at least five more songs, maybe by the end of the year. I'm trying to collaborate with some other musicians that are not like myself, maybe some spoken word, maybe some some, you know, slower rap artists and stuff like that, just so it's not such a niche, and so it's not such a boys club of sorts of the same punk rock over and over.
Yeah.
So I just want to continue having fun with it, but also I have some serious things to say.
Yeah.
Which cool, is kind of what I was doing. I was kind of doing that with Dogwood over the, you know, over the course of the songs. There's some fun songs, of course, but there's some serious topics too, you know?
Yeah.
Every time, you know, people stream Dogwood or talk to us online somehow through my Instagram accounts or through the Facebook page or anything like that, like, it's still a fun conversation to have sometimes with people asking questions about our certain songs, or, you know, like yourself asking more detailed questions about the history of things, because that's what we have now. Is Dogwood has a lot of history now because we're older and more retired. But as far as the new, like, St. Dedicus stuff, that's kind of like, I can kind of still carry a little bit of torch from some of the, not necessarily just from Dogwood stuff, but just music, the music industry in general. Just because I do still have a lot of friends in the scene and that are playing, so I had to go to a lot of shows and stuff. But I don't know if St. Dedicus will play or not. It's just more of an outlet of trying to get the energy and the emotion out there.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never thought